Market Watch is proudly brought to you by TopSport, home of the TopSport betting multi. Gamble responsibly. Call 1800 858 858.
G'day everyone, welcome to a special edition of the Rugby League World Cup. We're into round two of that. It's the usual suspects that are in attendance here. We're all brought to you thanks to topsport.com.au. Remember, home of the TopSport betting multi. I'm talking about Tristan Merlihan, the number one seed up there at TopSport. I'm also talking about Jared Connon from readingtheplay.com.au, who, from what I understand, has had a very significant milestone birthday during the course of the week. Anyway, we'll get to that very shortly. How are you, boys?
Yeah, very good, Jimmy. We got through round one of the World Cup, and it was a lot more competitive than I think us and most people thought it would be. So it'll be interesting if that can maintain its momentum over the remaining couple of rounds. And yes, there was a very, very significant birthday for Jared, which I'll let him touch on. We normally record this early in the morning, but we had to push it back to the Arvo for a couple of reasons. But I'll pass it over, Jared. It was a good weekend of footy.
Yes, never let the truth get in the way of a good story. And yes, turning the big 50 yesterday. I'm quickly catching up to Jimmy. A nice little highlight, and we could probably add a couple of years to that as well. But been a nice week and spoilt lovely by the family yesterday. So the World Cup, well, I'm really enjoying it. There's some really good footy last week, and we'll touch on some of those results and some interesting games coming ahead. But gee, it does start to look like that right-hand side of the draw with Australia and New Zealand are going to be panels in front of maybe what's coming through on the other side.
50, fair dinkum, uphill into the breeze, if that's the case. But anyway, let's look back. And by the way, when you say, Tristan, it looks like the Rugby League World Cup is a lot more competitive than we anticipated, that means that the sides we thought would cover the start didn't. So a shout-out to you, Australia and Tonga, on that one. Now, remember, like and subscribe this podcast wherever you get it. You can get it at Apple, you can get it at Spotify, wherever it is you download. Megaphone is now owned by Spotify, and that's where we're hosting, no longer Wooshka. So there you go. We will get into a tip for round two of the Rugby League World Cup in the meantime. And we'll also have a tip for the racing as well. How disappointing, though. Now, Lost and Running. We were all involved in Lost and Running, Jared, and then just scratched. And oh, dear. Didn't that little bit, oh, I won't say it, overshadowed the day, but I was looking forward to the run of Lost and Running.
What? Well, gee, I'm reliably told that, firstly, the three of us all tipped Lost and Running last Wednesday afternoon, that true to this word, on the Thursday, Lost and Running looked a little bit lame, and then things went downhill in the next couple of days. I mean, that was just hours after the three of us have tipped it. I mean, if that doesn't tell you anything, I don't know what does, but certainly the three of us may not be loading up again on the same horse. And we ended up with a Caulfield Cup. We'll get to racing in a moment. But, gee, Tristan, Newcastle Cup winner and Wyong Cup winner winning the Caulfield Cup, to my eye, he might be a nice stayer, but, gee, the form and quality of that as a Group 1 really looks to have fallen away. And then what about the Everest? 46,000 people singing Sweet Caroline as they're going to the barrier. I mean, PVL and Racing New South Wales would be absolutely over the moon at the interest and the crowd. And I have to say, they've completely reinvented this period now for New South Wales in competition to the Spring Carnival in Melbourne. And to see such a quality field in the Everest and then Giga Kick come from second last out of the turn and finish like he did, he's now undefeated after five wins, just amazing.
Oh, it was a fantastic day of racing. And, yeah, obviously the weather played its part, but it was the tracks played pretty well, I thought, considering what we've been up against. And yeah, Giga Kick was phenomenal. What a great day the Everest is in its own right now. And as you say, all the big crowd out there, the high quality racing. You know, Nature Strip, despite missing the place, I don't think lost too many admirers. It was a tricky position, which made the fact that it was so tight in betting, despite drawing that barrier where getting posted wide was always going to be some sort of chance. It made it sort of surprising, and you know, it's easy after the pack for that. But obviously, Lost and Running not starting was disappointing. And then, as you say, the Caulfield Cup probably has just taken a little bit of a back seat in recent times. But there's a couple of good races in Melbourne this weekend, the Manukato and the Cox Plate.
Tristan, do all boats rise with the tide? Do we see an uplift in turnover on Caulfield Cup because of Everest and Everest because of Caulfield Cup?
Yeah, we find that day one of our biggest turn. Obviously, you've got your Melbourne Cup and your Derby Day, which are historically our two biggest. But when you've got Everest and Caulfield Cup, we love that day because you've got high quality racing in both states. And I think they if they can work together, obviously there's a there's always a bit of a slangy match between those two states. But I think if you can work together and promote each other's code and get that high quality racing in two states, it just keeps the continuity of turnover really, really strong as long as you've got the best horses in the separate races. That's why you need to work it so you've got a sprint and a distance race on at the same time.
Can I ask you both a question? Is the Everest now Sydney's biggest thoroughbred race?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it has to be now. I still think Golden Slipper Day in itself, with the number of Group 1s and the quality of the Group 1s that they have at Easter time, is just an absolutely outstanding day for a racing purist. But, gee, to get 46,000 people and over the last 3 or 4 years build it in what they have. And, Jimmy, on the back of that, you know, I spoke to a couple of different mates who went on Everest Day in different parts of hospitality and then another friend who was... you know, in general attendance, and they said, and you know, they're long-term race goers who have also done many spring carnivals in Melbourne, and said it was just an absolutely outstanding day. Just, you know, and that they will be going year after year into the future.
Yeah, and I think just sorry to cut you off, Jimmy, but just to amplify that point, like the Golden Slipper is still, and that race day is still a huge event. But I think when people think of racing nationally, you think of the spring racing period. And when you've got a blue ribbon race like that Everest, like it was, where you got the quality of horses in those races, like they've got over the last couple of years, and you've got it on a day which is absolutely you know, built for racing, I think that just helps to amplify things. And yeah, they've done a fantastic job, and yeah, it's only going from strength to strength.
So, they were blessed with gorgeous weather too, which Sydney hasn't had a whole lot of. So that was another bonus for them as well. But I'm looking at it through the lens of every other sport, right? And I'm looking at it through the lens of rugby league. Rugby league, you could argue that the greatest amount of revenue comes into the game of rugby league by a concept that was created 42 years ago, right? State of Origin. The biggest race day now on the Sydney Carnival, as prescribed by you two, who know racing inside and out, is something that didn't exist 6 years ago. So you, as a sporting administrator, you start thinking about doing something new, and you know, you might catch lightning in a bottle the way they have with Everest, but that's the challenge. There's the challenge to you, because it can be done, and it's shown to be done, even against an industry that is traditionally, I would say, ultra-conservative like racing.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Jimmy, and I think it's a case of, you know, I've probably been against a couple of their other ideas where they've thrown some big money races at some of these secondary cards, and you know, you can't sort of get everything exactly right. So I think it's having the guts to try something a bit different. I don't know. Did you hear the same thing, Jimmy? When PBL was at school, he developed State of Origin and sent it through to the administrators as well. I'm not sure if that rumor is true or not, but yeah, no, it's a fantastic concept, and yeah, I think it's just the way it's flourished. It had its detractors in those early couple of years as well, and I think it's now gone. It's just developing the right horses and getting the high quality horses, and we're fortunate to have Nature Strip, which is, you know, one of the best sprinters in the world in our own backyard, and I think that's what's really helped it as well. So I'll let Jared continue.
Well, I think the other thing that then adds to that and growth into the future is we've had another three-year-old win the race, and he's gilded, so he's going to race on. You know, that's just fantastic for the sport itself. But the other thing too, Jimmy, over the last couple of years, you know, one of my daughters who lives in Sydney has attended the last couple of Everest. She's gone with 15 or 20 of her friends a couple of years ago. They bought into the hype. They're not regular race goers, yeah. Yet they've bought into the hype and gone and absolutely loved it. And then if there were 20 of them that went, you know, my daughter would say that probably 10 of them have become irregular race goers than they might go every 3 months now when they didn't used to do that. And then another side of that is, you know, another one of my daughters who's in her early 20s has taken an interest over the last couple of months. And, you know, it was, you know, all she was talking about Friday night and into Saturday was about the Everest. You know, so it's captivating those young people. And I think if we talk about, you know, how we might look at that across NRL, if we go to what's happened with the Magic Round in the last couple of years in Brisbane, I mean, again, that's been outstanding in capturing all of the rugby, so many of the rugby league community wanting to come to one venue for 3 days, have a bit of a party mix and just have a fantastic event. And, you know, maybe more double headers, maybe a little bit more of what they do along those lines that brings more people to a couple of games and creates a lot more of that atmosphere and buy-in is a path forward.
I think geographically, the rugby league can experiment. I think international rugby league, like top level, the Rugby League World Cup notwithstanding, but top level rugby league where you get your 4, 5, 6 nations that are all competitive playing on a more regular basis. I think there's something for that. Which brings us very neatly to the Rugby League World Cup. Jared, unless you had something.
Leading into the World Cup, Jimmy, I mean, I know we're now going to have 17 teams in the NRL next year. Surely there has to be a bit of an argument now about why PNG can't be considered as the 18th team. And, you know, all the noise seems to be about it being another team out of New Zealand. But, you know, PNG over the last 4 or 5 years of playing in the Queensland Cup and growing into that level of competition, and now their performance this week, and the fact that, as a nation, they absolutely just love the game. I mean, I don't know if we could find a ground and security that was maybe safe enough to have an NRL game up there every 2 weeks. But, gee, they must be close to being considered as a major part of what the NRL might be moving forward.
You need enormous government buy-in over a long period of time just to secure. And don't worry, there's plenty of natural resource miners up there that would be a part of that. But anyway, we'll get to that very shortly. Yeah, so let's have a look at last week first. We're going back before we go forward. As mentioned earlier, the closeness of the competition is really code for us saying, I don't know about you, Jared. I know you were on the -38.5 Australia, but when Fiji scored first, you start developing a little twitch, and then you think, no, couldn't possibly, could it? And then every time someone turns over the ball, shout out to you, Angus Crichton, in an attacking position, you're there going, oh, come on, surely it's going to get it done. In the end, they didn't. 42 points to 8. Takeouts on that one?
I thought they should have covered, Jimmy, and it was, yeah, we got to that last 20 minutes where Australia then, and Meninga rightfully, he's looking at the longer term of the next 3 to 4 to 5 weeks. He started to rotate players and move things around, and yeah, Munster came off, which was key, and I thought Australia tried to chance their arm a couple of occasions and push the football and turn it over, and even with only 5 minutes to go, Australia was still in a position to be able to cover the line, and yeah, I thought they were a little bit stiff not to, certainly not with Tonga. Tonga, to be quite honest, were damn lucky to win the game. PNG were just absolutely outstanding. And, you know, I was miles off there because I also had a decent bet like you on Tonga to cover the line. Well, that was just never close, yet one of the best games of the last week, wasn't it?
Yeah. If Dan Russell keeps his foot in touch, then who knows what it would have been there for Papua New Guinea. Tonga a little bit disappointing in that one. And in fairness to Australia, the two tries that Fiji scored, one was from a beautiful kick and the other one was from two kicks. So they didn't give up too much defensively. But Tristan, you saved the day. Italy +12.5, outstanding in their big win over Scotland. You saw that coming a mile off.
Yeah, they were very, very well backed as well. And I wish I'd have used your staking plan, Jimmy, and maybe put a little bit on the head to head, but I wasn't brave enough. But it was certainly a very comprehensive victory there for the Italians, and it was surprising the comfort that they won with, and it does set up a big challenge for Scotland now, which has made setting the line in this game very, very difficult. And I think we're going to have a few more difficulties setting lines in some of these games over the next little bit.
Well, as we go through some of those results just quickly out of last week, Jimmy, the other thing that this really brings into play when we look at the week two games is Fiji play Italy. Right now, if we go back a week ago, Italy were $101 to advance out of Group B. Well, they now have beaten Scotland. They'll get beat by Australia. So this Fiji game is absolutely critical to whoever comes through as the second seed. And Italy are, absolute surprise packet. I thought Scotland were very, very disappointing. I mean, they started 16-point favourites, and Tristan was right earlier in the week. I think it was closer to 20, and there'd been some money for them. The other game, it was a great opening game, ended up being a blowout. It's great for the English. You know, they ended up with a 60-6 result over Samoa. Samoa just didn't turn up. I think they had more time enjoying the hospitality of England than maybe focusing on that game. I will caution, I thought that there was probably 30 junk points in the last 20 minutes that blew that score out, and England maybe weren't as good as the scoreline looks. But they'll take confidence out of that. That now positions them as the number one seed. Samoa have got to pick themselves up, dust themselves off, and try and come through as the number two seed. Ireland, I thought Ireland were very good, did a very good job over Jamaica. You know, France were probably tradesmen-like. They didn't cover the line, but 34-12 winners over Greece. Lebanon actually were competitive and certainly stuck it to the Kiwis, and the Kiwis didn't cover the line. Their 34-12 result. And then this morning we had the Cook Islands only just get away with beating Wales 18-12 and again not covering the line. So I think the bookies have actually done pretty well out of most of the first week. But Tristan's right, it does now set up some very lopsided lines in a few of these games into week two. And then we're going to get into week three and, you know, a few teams that maybe can't compete or, you know, are probably just going around for the motions before they have a bit of a party.
Lebanon played 20 minutes with 12 men too, when Adam Dwayne, who has failed that, he's out of the side as it stands. It's a huge game, Lebanon v Ireland, because that'll decide who goes through in that group along with New Zealand. So the other thing we have to make mention of, Tristan and Jared going head-to-head in the Caulfield Cup. Now, runners coming from everywhere, and Tristan salutes. So that'll be another collect in lunch bets for you, Jared, on the back of the $87. So you better give us our for Pass It On Clothing charity bank balance update, Tristan.
Yeah, I'll certainly do that. And then I think we need to get the tally of where everyone sits for this new season of lunch bets as well, which started last week, I believe, too. $875 we've got at the kitty now for the Pass It On Clothing account. So it was a nice little collect there. We got $87 for Italy, and then Jared popped in the $50 to pay his lunch bet fine.
I can't tell you what expletives I did let out as I saw the Wyong Cup winner come through and beat, you know, Group 1 winners out of the Turnbull. But anyway, you were 100% right, Tristan. You were keen to lay the favourite, and you picked up all the money there as well as a lunch bet.
If we have started this new lunch bet table, when do I go and collect my four? When does that happen? Anyway, we'll keep you updated with that.
Jimmy, Tristan and I would probably suggest that's probably the same day that we collect from last year.
That's a never-ending uncollect, isn't it? So there we go. Hey, all right, let's get into these week two games. So, Tristan, I might get you to run through the market for us. It's a little bit difficult, as you say, with the one-sided nature of some of them. But it's starting with the Kangaroos. Nathan Cleary playing his first test match along with five other players on debut up there at Coventry up against the Bravehearts. So I think I can read to the next decimal point that price for the Kangaroos.
Yeah, this was a bit like playing pin the tail on the donkey here, this trying to work out where we pop this line. We opened it up at 60.5 and we laid the minus immediately. So the line went from 60.5 out to a high of 65. We laid it at each of the price points out to 65.5. And then just in the last couple of hours, there's been a little bit of support for the Scottish side at the 65.5, and we've popped it back into 63. So it's a real tricky one to work out where we're positioning this game. But right at the moment, we've got the line at 63.5. And you're right, Jimmy, the head-to-head pricing is Australia are 1.001. Scotland are 80-1. And one, I don't know if you call him brave punter, but one customer has had 8,800 on Australia at $1.001 to, maybe buy a soft serve or something. So he's very, very brave there. But the total points is an interesting one, 77.5. So we're expecting a point a minute in this game.
Wow. Well, if we got the total set at 77.5 and Australia at minus 63.5, you know, the market's suggesting that Scotland, you know, could well contribute maybe 10 to 12 points. I don't know how. I can't see them contributing a point. So certainly the only angle I'd probably look at would be under the 77.5. Gee, 63.5, that's an enormous line. But Scotland were just so poor last weekend. Australia are going to be stronger because they've got key players coming in that didn't play last week. The only risk, I think, is if you were keen to want to take Australia and at minus 63.5 is that last 10 to 15 minutes, if we then again start to see the player rotation. But, yeah, Australia win very comfortably. My only angle would probably be the under.
Just on that, Scotland's team totals is actually set at 5.5 short of the overs, $1.72 the over. So it's the expectation there is that Scotland will score one try and then it would leave the Aussies to put up around 70 points. So that's the expected score based on our betting, around 70-6.
I tell you what I think is going to be really interesting. What is the manner in which Mal Meninga plays this side? Because when you look at this side and what they can do, and I think we talked most notably about not so much at dummy half, but certainly at first receiver. And when we say first receiver in this side, we don't necessarily mean Nathan Cleary. We mean Isaiah Yeo. He does it for Penrith. He does it for New South Wales. What does he do for Australia? Because, you know, Cameron Murray plays a very different way compared to Isaiah Yeo. Yes, he plays first receiver and he digs into the line, but Isaiah does it differently, and Isaiah does it in complete concert with Nathan Cleary, who's very au fait with his game. So it's almost like they go hand in hand, and everyone's trying to talk about the combination between Cameron Munster and Nathan Cleary. I think the combination between Isaiah Yeo and Nathan Cleary is the really pivotal one. And to be honest, if you're Mal Meninga, you just have to say, well, play like you play at Penrith. Like in the space of a week or in the space of 4 weeks of this tournament, you're not going to change it. I think they're your best team, the best combination. Munster, I think, could play with anyone. So if that's the way, then Mal's just got to say, like, guys, just go and play the way you play for Penrith. We'll work around that. You know, that might be a little bit different with their dummy half, and Appy Coruscant seems to be very, very relaxed with it, and Damian Cook seems to get it. I don't think it's going to pose a problem for Harry Grant, but I think that's one of the really interesting points that's going to come out of this game against Scotland.
Well, I think the other thing that's interesting there too, Jimmy, is that Munster started last week, played very well, man of the match, comes off with, 15 or so minutes to go. Mal wants to start him again this week because he clearly wants to build on his combination with Nathan Cleary. I suggest, you know, that Australia are going to be leading by 40 or 50 or 60 coming into 10 minutes into the second half. Well, why do you then leave Munster out there? So Munster will be coming off. Who does he then put at six? And who else does he end up rotating out of the game? And that then lies the question, you know, are they covering 63.5 and is it high scoring? So I don't think Mal's going to want to take too many risks, but I don't know there's any risk to be taking against Scotland.
Yeah, I'd have to look at the under 77.5. I think that'd be and it goes against everything I believe in, boys. You know that, but you know you'll be desperate for Campbell Graham to be dropping the ball over the line, which is not what we want to see.
Well, Jimmy, at least if you're on the under 77.5, you've seen at least 76 points in the game before you're pulling their tail back.
Yeah, well, that's true. Fiji v Italy. This, as you mentioned, is going to be an interesting one. The market hasn't responded to Italy's great form, Tristan.
No, the market certainly hasn't. Although I don't know what if we price this market up a couple of weeks before the World Cup started, I think Fiji might have been below that $1.10 mark. So Fiji are $1.15, Italy $5.50, the line 16.5. So certainly very, very clear favourites, the Fijian side, should I say. Just having a look at where the betting's moved. It hasn't really. We've taken a little bit of action at the minus. The line opened at 14.5 and it's moved out to 16.5, and there's been just a few multis running through the Fijian side. So certainly support for Fiji to march forward.
Yeah, I think Fiji win. They were much better than I expected against Australia because I thought they were so poor in their pre-tournament trial. Whether that was a week where they were going to want to be up, and maybe they're a touch more complacent this week. If anything, I probably have to be with the plus, but it's not a game I like at all.
But this might be interesting then. If you think there were 30 junk points, England versus France, and now we've got England at a very short quote, France at $23, but the plus 36.5, Tristan. So this is an interesting one on the back of reasonably impressive France 34-12 over Greece.
Yeah, it is, and as Jared touched on, you know, sometimes that scoreline can be a little bit flattering, particularly when we know the wraps that Samoa had going into that game. But England's double the price of Australia head-to-head. They're 1.002. France at $23, and 36.5 is the line now. We did open the line at 38.5. It dropped into 35.5, and now it's just middle back out to 36. So it's sort of just trying to... It's a difficult thing to try to find where these numbers sit at the moment, but at 36.5, we are skewed towards the minus. But yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think probably the market has slightly overreacted to England's performance. It might be a little bit of a subtle letdown as well. Obviously, they would have been right up for that game against Samoa, first game at home in a World Cup, knowing that if they won, they were in a much better position. So whether there's just that little bit of a letdown, and France might be a bit more competitive than the market suggests.
Yeah, I certainly thought 38.5 where it opened a couple of days ago was a touch too high. I mean, France led Greece 20-0, and they didn't go on with it. Greece ended up coming up with two tries off adventurous plays, which I thought was positive, but suggests that, you know, France's defence was fair. You would have thought with the Robinson influence, that's going to be their key focus here this week. Certainly England win. I would have to probably lean to the plus 36.5, but, you know, no major confidence because I'm just not, you know, both in their trial and then in their first up game, the French have fallen away in the last 20 minutes. And again, we could see England just, you know, picking out three or four late tries and all of a sudden taking it out to a 40-point margin.
Yeah, it'd be interesting too, because for the very first time that basically France have all full-time athletes that are there. They're out of the two Super League clubs or been playing in the division below that. But there's only two or three players in that squad that have been playing in the division below. So they went with Tonga. Now, what do we take out of that result in the warm-up game and until about the 60-minute mark? And as you say, but the last try that Greece scored, it was spectacular. But it's Billy Margulies again chipping over from his own half. And anyway, good luck to you. Hey, can the Kiwis score 75 more points than Jamaica, Tristan?
Well, we were touching on earlier about how big the Australian line is against Scotland, and we've got an extra 11 points for the Kiwis, and they've been very, very well backed. It's $81 about Jamaica, and the line opened at 67.5 for the Kiwis, and it's bounced all the way out to 74.5. Certainly been one-way traffic for New Zealand to put on a big number against Jamaica, who were beaten soundly by Ireland. So obviously this is a much harder step up in class, and I do fear for the Jamaicans, and it could be a long old night for them.
Yeah, if there was one game where there's a team going to cover 72.5 or something into the 70s, you'd think that this is the one. Yeah, I mean, Jamaica are making up the numbers. They're the weakest of all 16 teams that are here, soundly beaten by Ireland. Probably could have been more. I'd say New Zealand are going to want to play for a little bit more combination this week. Like Australia, they were very clunky last week. Certainly New Zealand win, and, you know, if they're serious into the second half, then they'll give that 72.5 a big shake.
Jordan Rapana could kick, you know, 12 from 13 or something like that. Like that's... That's what was actually probably won't. He kick 8 from 13, and that might be the saving grace for the unders. The final game where the market is up for this for round two. This is a really interesting one. So Lebanon and the Wolfhounds, the tightest game of round two, Tristan.
Yeah, just before we get onto that, what about Reece Martin with his, was it 41 successful kicks, and commentary team did their best to stifle that when he had the kick from the sideline, notifying everyone of the record, and he slotted it straight over the middle. So, yes, I don't think Jordan Rapana will be doing anything in line with that. But, this last game is a hugely important game because this will see which side progresses out of the group stage, you would suspect. And Ireland have been well-backed early. They were backed a couple of days ago, which obviously coincided with the Adam Dewey news. And it's $1.62 now, the Irish side, $2.25 Lebanon, and 3.5. So it's gone from 2 out to 3.5. However, as you touch on, Jimmy, we've got to make sure we monitor if there's any late reprieve for Adam Dewey, because he would be one of the most influential players on the field here. Should be a really good game. Both sides perform probably better than expectation there in round one. So Lebanon will be keen to get the result and progress through, and so will Ireland, led by Luke Keary.
Well, he's been suspended and he has the right of appeal, but I'd be very surprised, given why he was binned and then suspended, that he ends up having the appeal upheld. So I'm expecting that he doesn't play. My other question, Mark, I said about Lebanon last week before their first game against the Kiwis, that with Checker as coach, he's very much a motivator, very much about getting his men up for a big effort. And I thought we saw some of that in week one. Now, whether there's a bit of a dip off and a bit of a letdown into week two, and also if Dewey's not there, I thought Ireland were good, strong. Keary was outstanding. I thought Ireland win, and I think they cover the line. I probably just want to wait and see if the appeal is dismissed and that Dewey is out. But I thought Ireland could cover the 3.5 and certainly be winning by 4 or more.
Oh, wow. I'm the other way. I am strong the other way. Dewey plays or otherwise. Moses v. Keary, it's a good matchup, isn't it? Because I just think that... That motivating factor that you talk about with Checker can work here, right? And that's where they potentially have themselves an advantage. Matty King doing some work there too with the Lebanon side too. So I'd really like them at the +3.5. Might even think about them at a head-to-head, which might form a little part of what's coming up very shortly. All right.
Well, Jimmy, the answer's yes.
Right, okay, thank you. Thought you'd never accept, but there you go, head-to-head. I'm going Lebanon +3.5. And, Jared, you're going Ireland -3.5 for a lunch bet.
And I would like to be involved too, please, gentlemen.
Well, you have to, right? Yes. And no doubt you have to go with Ireland too, right?
I absolutely have to go with Ireland. So, yes, so that might be your biggest chance, Jimmy. And, Aisling declared that they might be the next big superpower of international football after their opening round performance. So let's see if she's proven right, and we'll see if we can get a lunch bet on the back of it, Jimmy.
I know that she has become Wolfhound's number one ticket holder too, following their great performance in round one of the Rugby League World Cup. So is that your best, Jerry?
It is, Jimmy.
Oh, wow. So something about candy and a baby. But anyway.
Well, Jimmy, when you look through what was on offer this week, it was a little bit tricky to sift our way through. There's three other games which the markets will be up over the next couple of days. But Samoa take on Greece. You'd expect that Samoa are going to be very warm favourites. They have to improve, and there'll be a lot of focus and pressure around that. Tonga take on Wales. Again, you'd expect them to be very warm favourites with a big line. I would expect that they are far stronger. And PNG, Cook Islands, that'll be an interesting game. I mean, PNG will certainly be probably 10 to 12 point favourites. They get a chance to probably win well and try and help their for and against. So very good week coming up.
The other one that I was interested in too, I like France +36.5. So I don't mind that as an option too. I think on the back of, they strike me as the side will be improving through the tournament and probably playing their best football in their last game. So last round game. So I like the +36.5 for France. All right, gentlemen, huge weekend of racing coming up again. I think, how many races is there, Tristan? Is it 18 races in a 24-hour period at the Moonee Valley Racecourse? It's in what promises to be a wet sort of weekend. It certainly has been a wet week.
Well, and the Cox Plate is race 9 on Saturday. It could be the Cox Plate is race 9 on Saturday, so we could end up with a very wet Friday night into a very wet Saturday into a very wet Cox Plate.
Yeah, there's 8 races Friday night. There's 10 races on Saturday. anyone that that can get a little speed map sorted. We know that at the best of times, Moonee Valley can have, maybe not bias is the word to use, but it can certainly have some areas there and certain horses are advantaged. And I think this is going to be exacerbated this weekend. So I'd be watching your first couple of races on Moonee Valley on Friday night, and then not just looking at the back end of the card on Friday, but looking at what might transpire on Saturday, because I think there's going to be a few little lanes are going to be advantageous. I hope not, because I hope it's a really fair surface for racing, but it's I wouldn't want to be the curator. It's got to be the most difficult task, having 18 races over the 24-hour window.
Tristan, you might take us through the two big markets for the weekend, the Manicato on the Friday and the Cox Plate on the Saturday.
Yeah, Manicato on the Friday. It's always one of my favourite races of the spring. I just love it as a sprint race. Obviously, around the bend, we've just had the Everest, so maybe that one step down of horses. But I think it's certainly a high quality affair still, and we've got a very open field there. Palili is $4 into $3.70. Bala Nipotine has been very well backed. It's been $6.50 into $4.80. The one that I'm struggling to understand why it's so much wider than the rest of the options in this field is Coolangatta, drawn barrier one, Jamie Carr in the saddle, 51 kilos at $6. I just think it is, if not equal to those other couple of favoured runners in the race, and I think it is an enormous chance, providing the rails on, which I think it probably will be. So that's race 7, number 14, Coolangatta is my best play of the weekend. And then just giving a little bit of a preview of the Cox Plate before Jared jumps in. No, it is race 9, which makes things interesting. Zaki has drawn barrier 1. So, again, monitoring how the track plays, but $4.40 into $4, it's going to get the ideal run. Animo drawn really well as well. $2.45 into $2.30. I get the feeling it may drift Animo. I just think, just with a couple of things that might be happening in the marketplace at the moment, I get the feeling Animo may drift on race day. Not saying it can't win. I certainly think it's going to be the horse to beat. But if you're going to back Animo, back at Top Flight, because I just get the feeling late there's going to be a bit of a move against it.
Yeah, I think with all that weather around, you're 100% right, Tristan. Just going back to the Manicato, I think, again, you're going to need to watch into Friday afternoon and Friday evening what the weather is like coming into race 7 if we've started to see some wet weather as is anticipated. I thought number 2, 11-11, had a great knockout chance. Huey Bowman's got a great record with his horse. It loves dropping on them late, especially when they've been very quick, which what they will be here. Over the short course, 1200 at Moonee Valley. It's drawn to get a nice trail. And when the speed's on, it can finish very strongly. I thought it was a nice each way play at a price. I thought in the Cox Plate, again, the weather is just going to determine this. If the track was playing reasonably and fair, and I think Animo certainly wins, it'd be interesting to see if the bookmaker here is taking him on again. He just recovered to win his last start. I thought the horse, though, that again has nice wet track form. His track work on Tuesday was outstanding, and that's Mr. Brightside, number 4. I think that he'll probably push forward from 11 and take up a spot in the running line. I mean, Craig Williams could ride a broken broomstick at the moment. So $17 each way would probably be my play. I certainly think the favourite is the one to beat if the weather is okay. My play for the weekend, I went back to Randwick where, again, eye on the weather, but I thought race 8, number 4, Williamsburg, looked a great play. Somewhere around, I think, $6 or $7 at the moment it might be. It finally draws the gate, and this horse is just so honest. It's been very good around group company. Last start was taken right back to the tail of the field from a wide gate, finished very strongly to only just get beat. I like its chances this week, having now drawn a gate. Barrier 2, McAvoy can just position it up. 480 at the moment it is. I thought that was a nice play. So, Jimmy, I'll use my traditional staking plan of having $100 on the nose of Williamsburg at Randwick, race 8, number 4.
Yeah, traditional type play. You'd have never come up with the Everest, you know that? Very, very, very traditional in your approach to racing. So you've gone Randwick, race 8, number 4, Williamsburg, $100 on the nose. Tristan, your best is race 7 at Moonee Valley on Friday night, Cool and Gatter in the Manukato at $6. So I'm going to take you to Randwick as well. I'm going to take you to race 10. So you're going to have to be patient. So Acquitted is from the Australian Bloodstock. Chrissy Lees trains Dylan Gibbons to ride. So import, couple of barrier trials, would like to cut up ground a little bit over the 1,200 metres. Am I right in saying that this horse has come from $19 into $8.50, Tristan?
Yes, yes. I'm sure when you spruiked it to all of your myriad of followers, that's caused the move. But it's certainly been a big go. $19 into $8.50. And I don't, and sometimes in wet weather, we've seen some big goes in recent weeks, but there is not one scratching out of that race. So that is an absolute genuine go first up with Dylan Gibbons in very, very good form.
Yeah, well, the recommendation was to, you know, you were going to get a good price on the place, but that's, so I'm going to just manipulate my staking plan a little bit on this one. $50 each way, please.
$50 each way on Acquitted. I think that could be a good option.
Yeah, there we go. So, gentlemen, hey, I know we haven't spoken about it yet. We've got the Rugby League World Cup and, of course, the racing, but are we all enjoying our NFL as it stands?
Oh, absolutely. And what about the game of the season so far last weekend where we've seen the Bills? The Bills go into Kansas City and come away with the goods 24-20. You know, firm themselves right up as the team to beat. But most importantly, that win will be so much in play when we get to, toward the end of the seasons and the final positioning, because should the Bills and Kansas City end up equal, the Bills are going to end up with that advantage of having beaten them in Kansas City. So, you know, the Bills have been spoken about as warm favourites into this season. You know, they were... You know, some of us would argue a little bit unlucky back in January to have been beaten by the Chiefs. Well, it's on for young and old now.
Yeah.
Jeez, Jared, when you said game of the season, I'd assumed you were talking a couple of weeks ago when Seattle took on Detroit in the 48-45 thriller, where how could we forget about that? We're two high-quality teams of the future. But, you know, Detroit 1-4, it's a same old scenario there, unfortunately. They've lost a couple of close games. But, yeah, it's been a very different NFL season. There's a lot of teams that I think the expectation we had at the start of the year away from Buffalo and a few of these real high-quality sites, a few of your middle-tier teams just haven't quite performed yet. And it's just the way the divisions are placed. There's a couple of divisions there where all sides have performed under expectations. And then you look at Philadelphia, Dallas, and New York, that division, which historically has been a pretty weak division, all of those sides have really performed well. Philly's got a phenomenal draw. They're going to be steaming into the playoffs with a lot of momentum. Whether they're good enough against the high quality teams, I don't know if they're going to be tested until the big games roll around. But yeah, it's certainly been great to have it back.
Apparently, scoregami is a thing, right? So the number of different score lines that appear in the NFL, and that game that you were talking about, 48-45, had never appeared previously in the history of the NFL, and it was like the 1,124th. Different scoreline to appear in the NFL. So,
well, I think the other thing out of that game too, Jimmy, was probably it's the first time ever in their history that Detroit have got past 40 points. So there's probably another thing to write down. But you're right. I mean, Philly are just on a roll. I mean, Eagles in some great form, and great to see the Australian Big Melander there. You just don't want to run near him. He just crunches people. And what about the Giants? I mean, against all the odds, they just keep bobbing up and winning as the underdog. And that's added some spice to at least some interest around what's happening there. We saw the Dolphins start 3-0, but they've fallen to quite a hole. And, you know, the Broncos, with their big play in picking up Russell Wilson, well, he'd almost qualify for possibly the dud buy of the season at the moment. The Broncos are absolutely struggling and going backwards. So, yes, a lot to look forward to into the coming weeks, Jimmy, but I think it's all about the Bills when the whips get cracking.
Yeah, the beauty of it for Russell is that he's got multiple years to run on his contract out there at Denver. So, all looking good for him, I think.
What about the story during the week, Jimmy, that any of his teammates, if they'd like to have a conversation with him, have to put it in writing as a request through his manager?
Is that right? I didn't see that.
Yes.
I really like my down-to-earth quarterbacks.
I'm not sure that Russell's one of them.
Yeah. Take in, take out, according to RJ Ochoa this week for week seven is the Colts head to Tennessee to take on the Titans. He reckons that's just money for Jam, the -2 for the Titans at $1.89. So do with that what you will. All right, gents, big weekend. Round two of the Rugby League World Cup. Fantastic racing as well. I'm sure you will enjoy it. And if we do get the situation where Lebanon are able to cover that +3.5, you will be hearing from me.
Has John O'Shea touched base with you yet this week, Jimmy?
John O'Shea? No, yeah, no.
The trainer of Lost and Running?
No. Tell you what, Zoo Tiger's running around for John O'Shea, though. So Zoo Tiger will be a very interesting one. So I've got a mate with a sister's got a share in it. So very exciting times when you've got a talented horse like Zoo Tiger. But as it, you know, John, call me. You don't need to make a booking or anything like that. Just like Russell,
we might pop a message through to John to let him know that you made Lost and Running your best bet last week.
I'm sure he'd be pleased to hear that. Good on you, boys. Enjoy your weekend.
Take care, gentlemen.
Reading the Play is Australia's favourite source of NRL and horse racing tips. Our professional analysts provide the sporting enthusiast with the best of the best. Get the best professional tips and previews from our tipsters direct to your phone. Readingtheplay.com.